This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Bookmark. I'm Umar Paganampake Pagan, and this is 50 Books in 50 Weeks, or rather, the very last one. Here we are, at the end of yet another year, 50 weeks gone, 50 books consumed. Next year, come January, I'll be embarking on another different literary project right here on Bookmark, so stay tuned for that. So ordinarily on this show, in this particular space over the last 49 weeks, I have spoken about a book that I felt was worth consuming in one way or another, James Joyce's Ulysses being the one exception. What I do is present a general overview, a quick summary, a short review, coupled with music, interviews, some readings. It is, in short, a sales pitch. It is meant to entice you, to compel you to pick up the book in question, to turn to the very first page, and to not want to stop reading until you reach the very end. In this final week, however, in something of a break from tradition, I put forward instead an impassioned plea on behalf of Cervantes, on behalf of Don Quixote, the world's first novel, the pioneer of this narrative form that we all now know and love. Because you are not yet a reader, not really, not until you've read Don Quixote.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents...
The bright side is that you're already halfway there, because the story of Don Quixote is already a part of our collective literary consciousness. The plot is familiar, imitated, emulated, replicated a million times across an entire range of genres. The tale of an aging hero, enthralled by books on chivalry, and overcome with a desire to live the adventures within them.
I'm E.G. Marshall. In almost the identical years that William Shakespeare was writing plays in his native England, plays that were to become one of the richest treasures of Western civilization, another European was creating his masterpiece. The man was a Spaniard, Miguel de Cervantes. His work, The Adventures of Don Quixote, a 400-year-old story of a curious combination of two men whose lives were to become dramatically and inextricably entangled.
So he picks up a lance, an ancient shield. He dons some improvised headgear. He quietly escapes his home. He enlists the help of one Sancho Panza as his squire and begins his quest. His addled mind begins to perceive things as greater than they are. His skinny nag is elevated to the noble steed Rosinante. A local girl is upgraded from peasant to princess Dulcinea, the mistress of his adventures and his one true love. He tilts at windmills. He engages in battle with a Basque mullet. Tear. His delusions begin to overwhelm him. He descends slowly but surely into madness.
What are you up to, my lord?
Stand your ground, you cowardly knaves! You dastardly giants!
Careful, master! They're not giants, they're windmills!
Quiet, Sancho. I may be only a single knight alone, you miserable, overgrown, faint-hearted monsters!
Stay where you are! The windmills are turning! You can get killed!
The book was originally published in two parts, but a fake sequel was published by somebody using the pen name Alonso Fernandez de Avellaneda before Cervantes' second part was printed in 1614. Cervantes responded to this by including an imposter in the second part, as well as ending with Don Quixote's death to avoid any more unofficial sequels. Since 1605, Don Quixote has been interpreted in a huge number of ways, and today it is reputed to be the most widely read and translated book on the planet after the Bible. So what explains its popularity and enduring appeal? In many ways, it lies in the character of Quixote himself, an individual who moves across history, presenting different masks and being appreciated sometimes as a madman, sometimes as an idealist. He is elastic. The book was originally regarded as a comic novel, but this interpretation was radically revised during the French Revolution. Quixote's appeal is that he transcends the circumstances into which he was born or created.
One of the most blessed gifts a man can have is his imagination, the power to dream, to conceive, to create, and finally, with persistence, to turn dreams into reality. But men of vision, men with more insight than the rest of us, are often scorned and derided for what would seem to be their impractical, even mad ideas. which is the story of Cervantes Don Quixote de la Mancha. We retell some of his adventures through the perceptive eyes of his faithful follower, the short, pot-bellied, simple, no-nonsense Sancho Panza.
You could approach Don Quixote from the American perspective, or the French, or the Soviet, and each individual in those contexts would be able to understand him and identify him.
Many years ago, in the province of La Mancha, lived a man known as Don Quixote. He was about 50 years old, tall, rangy, long-legged, lean-waisted, and brown as a walnut from the golden sun of our beautiful Spain. When he had nothing better to do, which was most of the time, Don Quixote would pore over thick volumes of old books, books of long ago, and especially those books that had to do with knights and challenges, battles and tournaments, chivalry and wicked magicians.
In the communist Soviet Union, Don Quixote was perceived as a rebel, anti-capitalist hero. He was embraced as the perfect symbol to fight the capitalist society on the other side of the Iron Curtain. And paradoxically, Don Quixote can also be seen as representing exactly the opposite ideology. He could also be the ultimate representation of the American dream, which will make the individual be at the very core of society. But for me, for this reader, Don Quixote's appeal has always been in his lunacy, in his tilting at windmills. I have always loved the idea of the madman, who has more wisdom than the society that's trying to limit his behavior.
It is long past time, good lord, my uncle, for you to get some sleep.
No, not until I finish this book, my good niece Esmeralda. I'm almost through.
The cocks are crowing. The stub of candle is sputtering with the coming light of day.
Just let me read you this. Listen. With one last mighty effort, Don Alejandro de Salamanca, covered with his shield, raised his mighty lance, dug spurs into the sweating flanks of his noble steed, and galloped fiercely toward the enemy.
It is so late.
The wicked sorcerer, eyes all ablaze, met him full on, but was no match for the gallant knight. Are you listening, girl?
Oh, I am so sleepy. I must get to bed, and so must you.
You listen?
I listen.
The brave knight's lance found an opening in the enchanted armor of the evil sorcerer, who immediately fell to the ground, dead. Whereupon, Don Alejandro raced to the castle, rescued the beautiful princess from her dark dungeon prison, and rode off with her to...
To where, my lord?
It doesn't say. The last page of the book is missing. Oh, what a pity.
Now will you stop thinking about this nonsense and go to sleep, my uncle? Please.
So the one question that remains is just what version of Don Quixote should you read? After this, on 50 Books in 50 Weeks, Bookmark. The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
And the knight with his banners all bravely unfurled now hurls down his gauntlet to thee. I am I, Don Quixote, the Lord of La Mancha. My destiny calls and I go. And the wild winds of fortune will carry me onward, oh, whithersoever they blow. Whithersoever they blow. To glory I go.
I'm Sancho, yes, I'm Sancho. I'll follow my master till the end. I'll tell all the world proudly I'm his squire, I'm his friend.
Hear me, heathens and wizards and serpents of sin. All your dastardly doings are past. What a holy endeavor is now to begin, and virtue shall triumph at last. I am I, Don Quixote, the Lord of La Mancha. My destiny calls and I go. Fortune will carry me upward, oh, whithersoever they blow.
I'm his friend.
We
Many, many years ago, in 16th century Spain, in an area known as La Mancha, there lay a quiet little village. And in the village, there was a large estate that belonged to a middle-aged gentleman named Alonso Quijano. Instead of taking care of his estate, like most other gentlemen at the time, Alonso Quijano preferred to read books about chivalry, about knights and shining armor. And the more he read, the more he envied the knights of old. They led such exciting lives. He imagined that he was a brave knight on a fast steed riding through the land, protecting maidens in distress and slaying dragons and monsters.
Sancho!
Yes, sir, may I help you?
Sancho, I will become a brave knight and you my squire. We will ride through the land and uphold justice for all.
You're listening to Bookmark. I'm Umar Paganampike Pagan, and we finally reached the 50th book in this year-long quest. This is the last 50 books in 50 weeks. And for this week, we're talking about the book that is widely considered to be the first novel, Don Quixote by Miguel de Cervantes. Today, I'm making an impassioned plea for you to read this book. But where do you start? Which version of Don Quixote does one read? Unfortunately, unless you are fluent in the language of Cervantes, you have to resign yourself to a translation. But which one? Now, a translator's job goes beyond just the act of rendition. A translator needs to deal with more than just words. There are ideas, there are concepts, there are cultures. A translation is a work in progress. It shifts with the times. It evolves right along with our language. It strives to become more and more accessible, because only then does such a work stand the test of time. When each subsequent generation is motivated enough to actually look through its pages, to choose it above all others and consider what it has to offer.
So I shall choose a new name for her.
A new
name? I shall choose a name for her that will go down in the annals of history. She shall be known as Dulcinea del Toboso. And in her name, I shall become known for my deeds of honor and glory.
But there was one small hitch in Don Quixote's grandiose plans. He had not yet been knighted. In the great heat of a day in July, cased in his plates of iron, Don Quixote mounted Rocinante, who grudgingly tottered at his own dragging pace into the fields. And by late evening, the Don arrived at a large inn, which he joyously took to be a castle.
There is nothing more unfortunate than an unread book, for then it is merely a vessel, a hollow container. It is but a receptacle for words, because a book that remains on a shelf is a wasted opportunity. Now, the job of the translator becomes even more consequential when it comes to something as little read as Don Quixote. We are familiar with it, we refer to it, we imitate it, but alas, it is a tome that finds itself more on our shelves than in our hands. Like so many great works of literature, like Moby Dick, like Wuthering Heights, The Great Gatsby, In Search of Lost Time, Don Quixote is just another book that we know but haven't actually read. When reading a work like Don Quixote, when embarking upon such a literary adventure, it is of the utmost importance to pick the right translation, especially when it is a work so removed from our everyday sensibility, so remote from us in both time and space. And therein lies the translator's dilemma, because the text is merely the source. It is the conceptual starting point, one from which the translator has to make a choice between form and function, between maintaining a truthful aesthetic and merely representing a particular vision. With that in mind, there is only one modern translation of Don Quixote worth reading, and that is the one by Edith Grossman. I have to speak to you about Don Quixote.
Oh, well, that's my favorite subject.
Oh, fantastic. Because your translation was an absolute revelation for me, and I need to ask you, why Don Quixote? Is it the ultimate challenge for someone working in the Spanish language?
Well, why Don Quixote? The answer is the publisher called me and asked me if I wanted to do the translation, if I wanted to translate Don Quixote.
That must be like winning the Oscar.
Oh, it was incredible. It was like winning the lottery and the Oscar, both at the same time. and I said, do you have the right Grossman? I said, I do contemporary Latin Americans. He said, no, I have the right Grossman. Are you interested? I said, of course I'm interested. And then I signed the contract, and I said, oh, my God, what have I done? How will I ever translate this book? So I remember writing to a Spanish author whose work, a couple of whose books I had done, Julian Ríos, and I told him that I was going to translate the Quixote, and I was very excited and very nervous. I was terrified of this project. And he said the thing that really helped me. He said, don't be nervous. Cervantes is the most modern author we have. All you have to do is translate him the way you translate everybody else. I said, that's right. So I can't try to put this wonderful, sparkling, cutting-edge language that Cervantes wrote into some quaint 17th-century version of English. Cervantes was not writing quaint language. He was struggling with the creation of a literary language and a literary genre, which is he was creating contemporary literary Spanish, and he was creating the novel. And he was doing utterly avant-garde work, utterly cutting-edge work. So there was nothing quaint or picturesque or old-fashioned in anything he did. And I said, that's what I have to keep in mind. I can't do fake Shakespearean English and pretend that that's what Cervantes wrote.
That was from a conversation I had with Edith Grossman earlier this year about what it was like translating a classic like Don Quixote. Somewhere in La Mancha, in a place whose name I do not care to remember, a gentleman lived not long ago, one of those who has a lance, an ancient shield, on a shelf and keeps a skinny nag and a greyhound for racing. There is a sense of balance in Grossman's interpretation. It isn't too ornate, neither is it unadorned. She picks her words carefully, her intention to convey an immediate understanding, to communicate meaning effortlessly. Because Grossman writes in a contemporary style, it is living, breathing English. It is a modern approach that makes this translation both accurate and accessible, thereby fulfilling the larger responsibility of generating readership.
I remember from my reading that an honorable man may request knighthood at the hands of the first knight he meets. Sir Keeper of the Castle, may I presume on your good nature to do me that great honor?
I'm no more than the landlord of this inn.
I know you say that so no evil sorcerer may hear and take advantage of you.
Of course, of course. Roland, suppose you must kneel. Let me help you.
Now, say the words.
Certainly. Ibbity, ibbity, bibbity, ibbity, Sam. Ibbity, bibbity, canal boat. Dictionary down the ferry. Fun, fun, sword and gun. 1491. Now rise, Sir Knight. Whatever your name is, rise.
Not so easy getting up with all this armor.
Yeah, so I see.
This is a big book, and therefore to most of us it must be a murderous book. For our modern age has created such a disdain for all things large and sprawling. Scale, what was once considered to be encyclopedic, even universal, is now frowned upon as being merely the product of poor editing. The reading class of the past, it seems, had a greater leisure for these pursuits. This is not an easy book. It is inconsistent, it is contradictory, it is troublesome, it is hard work in the same way Shakespeare is, in the same way Melville is. That being said, it is also a work that pays off in similar ways. For what comes with reading it is a sense of history. For what comes with finishing it is a sense of accomplishment like nothing else. And so I urge you to ignore Martin Amis, who called Don Quixote an impregnable masterpiece, who claimed that it suffered from outright unreadability. I implore you to read this book for the sake of it and nothing else, to take your time with it, to do so unhurriedly, so as to let it all soak in.
Sancho!
Huh?
Bring my armor and prepare my mount. There is too much injustice in the land for us to rest. Onward we'll march, fighting for justice forever!
And so, once again, our brave knight donned his armor and, along with his faithful squire, was ready for battle. They galloped away, determined to right the wrongs of the land. Don Quixote would not let anything stop him from fulfilling his dream of becoming a brave knight.
This is the last episode of 50 Books in 50 Weeks. Over the last year, I've spoken about everything from Sherlock Holmes to Alice in Wonderland, from The Catcher in the Rye to Slaughterhouse-Five. I hope you've enjoyed listening to these short excursions as much as I've had making them. I'll be trying something new in 2016, so stay tuned for that. It's only a week away. This is Bookmark on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
It is the mission of each true knight, his duty, nay, his privilege, to dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right, without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest, and the world will be better for this, that one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to unreachable star.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.